Welcome back to another episode of Let's Remake a Movie. Prepare to have your mind blown by horrendous plot lines, unforgivable mashups, and so many explosions. Podcast not sponsored by Michael Bay. Suit up, strap in, and let's remake a movie.
Hey.
So, Laura, how is
Connor,
your evening been?
Connor fucking Finnerty. How the hell are you?
Oh my god, well. We're off to an exciting start.
You fucking better be recording right now because I cannot guarantee any of the gold that comes out of my mouth.
Oh yeah, don't you worry. I already smashed that record button.
Oh man.
And not a moment too soon.
Yeah. Oh shit. Oh man. I gotta say, I'm not scotch or whiskey drunk tonight. Tonight is wine drunk, so we will see how that fares. This is my scientific method for the podcast. My research, the things I do for my art and also scientific research.
Okay, so you get drunk on wine to scientifically research Friends and the film Knives Out?
Yes, it was open, and so I'm experimenting. I hope it works for everybody.
Take us through your process. How does getting wine drunk fill you in with, like, to investigate how Benoit Blanc, Daniel Craig's character, would investigate Friends?
Murder mysteries are a lot more sophisticated. And so, like, I feel like the detective would drink whiskey or scotch because he's, like, you know, discerning the scene, he's investigating the characters. But I feel like if I was a femme fatale murderess in the crowd, I would have to be drinking blood red wine. Like, that is the only thing that cinematically makes sense.
It does make sense. Although I think Benoit Blanc does indeed, he drinks something. I forget, it's something very distinct, and I can't
think
of all.
Bourbon, because he's Benoit Blanc.
It would make sense if it's bourbon. Yes.
Yeah, because he sounds like Foghorn Leghorn, but I think his character is from somewhere in the Appalachians. Like Kentucky, somewhere like that.
Someone who has actual knowledge of the real world. Is Daniel Craig really from Britain or what? Because his Foghorn Leghorn is dead on, but...
Yeah, he's from Britain.
He is. Really? He is, yeah. But here's a fun fact for you, because...
I love fun facts.
Good, I'm glad. So here's one for you, then. The British and especially the Australians are really good at it. It's actually, their accents are closer to a southern U.S. accent than a northern U.S. accent is to a southern U.S. accent. So that's why,
right?
Yeah, really? That's why they actually say one of the closest cousins to the American South accent is actually the Australian accent, just because of it's mouth shapes and things like that. But it's also, you know, that's why a lot of British and Australian actors can do killer accents like that.
That's pretty amazing.
Hmm.
It's also why my southern accent usually comes out sounding like a prospector.
I was just going to say, no matter if you see how drunk Laura is right now, just remember that wherever Matthew Perry is, he's 5 times drunk right now.
Josh,
even if it's 11 a.m. on a Wednesday, it doesn't matter. He's still, oh man. Yeah, Laura's just trying to be.
But he stopped the pills, and we should be proud of him for that.
Yay, Matthew. Good for him. Okay, so we've touched on accents. We've touched on Laura being drunk and Matthew Perry being more drunk. Let's get into the film. So for this episode, we're going to be doing Friends, but they're investigated by Benoit Blanc, Daniel Craig's character from Knives Out. That's his next murder mystery kind of a thing. But at first, he doesn't come to investigate a murder. He goes to investigate how the hell they can afford all those fancy apartments.
Should we relocate their apartments to be inside this, like, giant mansion in New York?
No, it should absolutely be that ridiculous, like, 3-room bedroom apartment that you could not have afforded on a chef's salary. Because we're basing this on Monica's apartment, right? We're not basing this on, like, the shithole across the hallway, right?
I would say mainly Monica's apartment, but yeah. the apartment across the hall might play into it in some capacity.
Well, before we get into all of that, like, we have to set the scene, Connor, especially because, you know, setting the scene is very important. Musically, it's important. Thematically, it's important that we set the scene of how do they discover Ross's body.
So we start with, I would say, the friends are all in Monica's apartment just talking, and all the same tensions boil up, you know, Ross and Rachel acting like that, like bitching about who was on a break, you know, the sexual tension between Monica and Chandler. Joey can afford a nice apartment even though he's an unemployed actor.
He's not unemployed. He's on The Bold and the Beautiful.
Yeah, he's Dr. Ray something or other.
Oh, Drake Ramore. That's
Drake
what
Ramore,
it is.
Drake Ramore, yeah.
And then it gets killed off eventually.
Days of Our Lives. Joey was on Days of Our Lives. I have the expert in the room with me.
Okay, cool.
And
I'm
ultimately
glad
he becomes the face of Ichiban, lipstick for men.
Nice. All right. So they're all hanging out. But then they should get they're all being very casual about it. But then they get a knock at the door. They open the door and maybe some like spaghetti Western style strings start playing to make it a little ominous, Laura. And then Rachel opens the door and there is Benoit Blanc. Nobody knows why he's here, but he's here to investigate something. And then he starts asking them about like how the hell they afford those apartments, and it all sounds very suspicious.
Okay. So I think the important thing is like before we hit like the main credit titles, because there's especially in those, you know, mid-90s sitcom-y things.
Yes.
There's always like the setup and then the opening credits and then the actual show itself. So for the setup, we have them all in the apartment. Now, why are they all in the apartment? I think the best thing to be is they're all either about to go to the funeral or they're at like the wake for the person who has been murdered.
So you're thinking that. Oh, okay.
And then
because that's when Benoit Blanc shows up, it's because someone has been murdered, but he shows up way too conveniently for it to be like, yeah, you know what I mean? So like just as the investigation is starting, he's already
and
there.
Then he can also mousetrap it and basically ask for a recreation of the crime of sorts.
Oh, interesting. So, okay, so we're starting with Ross being dead. And then we do the whole theme song, I'll Be There For You, blah, 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 blah. And then Benoit Blanc shows up.
Uh-huh.
I think, especially if you're going to go, like, the Friends route of, like, the type of humor that Friends had, I think the opening has to be something to the effect of, like, Joey and Chandler coming across the hallway asking for like something like a deodorant or like a room spray or a scented candle or something from the ever feminine Rachel or Monica, because there's some weird smell coming from their apartment.
Oh, okay.
And they're like, oh my God, why is your boy apartment so gross that you would need it? That you would need our scented. And so of course Monica like comes out of her ever so populated, you know, cabinets with, okay, would you like, you know, effervescent rain, clean linen, or cucumber summer?
And she's very particular and the boys about just, which one they choose. And they
very particular. They're like, I'll take cucumber summer. And she's like, wouldn't you prefer like this linen scent? Because she like wants to keep that one for herself.
Yeah.
And like presses them, you know, comedic style, presses one scent upon them. They finally accept one. They say, yeah, we have to light this because there's some funky smell coming from our room. And then of course someone says like, Joey, did you forget to wash your cue the laugh track.
All right,
of course that's typical 90s humor. They go across the hallway to light the candle and like change the scentscape of the room of the bachelor pad across the hall. And they go, wow, Chandler, I feel like the smell is coming from your closet or something. Don't you know you're supposed to keep your gym shoes like out in the hall or something? And of course somebody opens the closet door and out falls the body of Ross Geller.
Oh man.
Total like dead stop silence, and all of a sudden you hear Chandler say, man, I didn't think my gym socks smelled that bad. Cut to that.
The one where Ross gets murdered.
And it's Ross's body that falls out of the closet. Cut to the theme music. And then
with his
course,
leather pants tied around his neck.
Okay, what we also have to add, is we do like the Central Park couch thing where they're all like dancing in there, but they're like but Joey and Chandler are holding up Ross's dead body Weekend at Bernie's style.
Weekend at Bernie's style, being like, I'll be there for you.
And it cuts to him when they show him in the fountain and he's just face down floating. And David Schwimmer.
Oh man.
And David Schwimmer. Yeah, exactly.
Oh man. All right. Well, this guy.
They turn off the little lamp. The credits continue to roll for the executive producer, and then it cuts to everybody sniffling gently in Monica's apartment several days later at the wake, and they're just saying, I can't believe it. He was such a gentle soul. Who would ever want to harm Ross? And that's when you cut to door bust in. Benoit Blanc walks in saying,
I was also just going to say, somebody should put out that he killed himself. And theorize that that's what happened, and maybe then we suspect that they're the ones who actually killed him.
Wait, instead of him kicking down the door, can we just have him, like, he was in the apartment the whole time?
And if you roll back the tape, he's very clearly standing in the background with a lampshade on his head. Like, right next to the candle closet, perhaps even hands Monica a candle.
Oh, I like that. I like that. So, yeah. So Benoit Blanc has been there this whole time. And then it turns out he's been hired by a client to investigate the case. He doesn't know who the client is, but then he starts asking them some questions.
Yeah. So the NYPD is at the wake too, asking individually people to like step into the hallway or the kitchen or something, just to ask them some very simple, straightforward questions, because he was found in the closet. And although we suspect suicide, things are just a little too odd to be suicide. So they just want to make absolutely certain they've tied up all their loose ends. You know how the NYPD is just so meticulous about their paperwork and details.
Yes, they are. They are very particular about that. So Benoit Blanc starts to investigate.
Connor, I think she was being ironic.
Oh.
I was absolutely being sarcastic. That was for the laughter.
I was waiting for the laughter, and I was like,
I'm sorry.
She's a lawyer who's three drinks in.
Include half a bottle of red wine in. Thank you very much. Also, I don't have
only half a bottle? Jesus.
I drank the other half earlier. I
less a bottle, more rum.
Oh my god, I don't have the 90s laugh track available. If I didn't have a button that every time I said something funny or Connor said anything at all, I would be able to press a button and all of a sudden a 90s laugh track would be able to go ha ha ha, ha or ooh or some shit like that.
Oh yeah.
Quick side note, if anybody ever needs to smile, I'd highly recommend you look at Inappropriate Laugh Track, because there are people who will take like the very special episodes of a 90s sitcom, but they'll put like their own laugh track and stuff to it.
Like Saved by the Bell, I'm so excited version, and after Jesse has her like full caffeine pill breakdown, we'll say like suddenly insert a laugh track inappropriately.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites is the very special episode of Full House where Stephanie has a friend who's being abused by his dad, and you know he's confessing, and this very emotional scene, and it's you know, he says, yeah, he does hit me, but, you know, you can't tell anybody about this. It doesn't matter if you swear on your mother's life, you can't tell anyone this. And she goes, but my mother's not alive, which cut to the insertion of the perfect 90s audience.
Oh, my God.
That's horrible.
Why isn't there an app that exists for me to just cue a perfect 90s?
There has to be one. Oh, okay.
God. I'm sure there is.
Ross is dead. The NYPD is doing a crappy job investigating it. And some random person hired Benoit Blanc to investigate the matter. Who is like, is there somebody he suspects the most? Because I think we should get into the point where Benoit Blanc starts talking with everybody and starts to ascertain their reasons for wanting Ross dead.
Well, yeah, of course, first they're going to talk to the family.
Family and significant others, which means Monica and Rachel. And obviously the fact that, you know, Monica was being teased as a child, but she was fat. And then Rachel, who's still upset that Ross cheated on her while they were on a break.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But check out this. I came up with this backstory for Monica. Ross was going to get all the inheritance money, which made Monica furious. So she might have motive to get Ross out of the picture so she gets all the inheritance money.
Yes! Oh my God.
That was terrifying for half a second. It's important to remember that that canonically, Monica, quote unquote, inherited the apartment lease from her grandmother under New York's rent laws. So,
okay.
Oh, the Rent Stabilization Act?
Exactly. Very nicely done, Madam Attorney. And it's important, I think we have to keep this in mind, that Monica could feasibly afford the apartment, but only just barely, because according to this article from Money.com, Monica's apartment in Friends, according to Trulia, would cost about $4,200 a month.
Shut the fuck up, Sean. How much research did you do about this? Oh my God, that is
luckily a lot of it was done for me already. And something I do remember from a BuzzFeed article is that one of the ways the writers basically wrote off how they were able to afford it is that it's very clear that there's no elevator in the building and that they mentioned they live on the fifth or sixth floor or something like that. So they've got a walk up that's really high up. So, you know, that also knocks it down. And Monica, as an executive chef in 2016, the average salary for an executive chef is about $78,000. So reasonably, she could pay for the apartment, but she's not going to have a lot left over to save.
Well, she could always take food from the restaurant to supplement, you know.
This is true. And we also do know that she's
stuff.
Very careful about what she personally eats because she's concerned about her own image and her personal history of weight issues.
She was fat when she was a kid.
Yeah.
Thank you, Connor.
Laura's like, shut the fuck up.
My trademark.
Shut the fuck up. So Benoit Blanc is cornering the family in the kitchen, just asking them some general questions. And one of the things he says is, you know, oh, my dear Miss Geller, I am so very sorry for your loss. I just have to ask, this is such a beautiful apartment. How does someone of your caliber in your line of work afford such a richly decorated walk-up? And that's way she can give like the whole backstory of how she can afford the apartment.
You did a great job with that impression, by the way. That was awesome. The one woman on the podcast does the best impression of Daniel Craig.
I lived in Virginia for 3 years and had to blend in. So I can do a foghorn leghorn like you would not believe.
And you can tell by the fact that she uses all four syllables in the state of Virginia's name.
Yeah.
Virginia.
That's right.
This is the one character impression I will steal away from Connor Finnerty is the only one I got is Benoit Blanc as like a true Southern gentleman.
We should have an impression off where you do Benoit Blanc and I do Alan Rickman.
You'll win. It's not fair.
No, I'll just do Alan Rickman. I'll just do Professor Snape / Hans Gruber and you do Benoit Blanc. It would be amazing.
Oh my God.
But
so, okay. So he interviews the family. They reveal information about how they can afford the apartment and how sad they are. And of course, before they leave the table, Benoit Blanc says, again, I am so sorry. I must offer my condolences. I must ask, did Ross have any enemies, anybody that he had particularly made outrate lately? And you like that? I practiced.
Very good.
And very good. You know, they'll mention, of course, maybe some competing paleontologists at the museum. Yeah. They'll mention the ex-girlfriend, you know, Rachel, and also the lesbian ex-wife, Susan. They'll mention everybody.
I forgot about the lesbian ex-wife.
Dude, that was like the first two seasons. How can you forget that, man?
I watched the later seasons to catch up. I literally just started a free trial of HBO Max. But
that's like half his backstory is the lesbian ex-wife,
man. It explains so much, honestly. Okay.
Really, it does.
But what should happen is she should mention that. And then they get to Rachel next. And then Rachel tries to talk about how jealous Monica was that Ross was getting all the inheritance. So there's starting to be a little bit of mind games of who's trying to throw who off the trail.
Yeah, because Rachel, in her like infinite, you know, you know, girlisms is just like, you know, why are you talking to me? I don't have anything to do. You think I have something to do with this? I don't have anything to do with this. You should be talking to Monica. She's the one that said, and then of course they start turning on each other.
Yeah.
Like one by one.
That's right. And so we suspect one of them is going to be like the main suspect at first. Cause that's how Knives Out worked, was like, there were some people that you thought were the main suspect, but everybody kind of had motive.
Are we doing that this takes place before or after Emma is born, Rachel and Ross's child?
Let's say before. Well, just because it's easier. So.
Okay. So she is still, so we have, she is still pissed about Ross cheating on her while they were on a break.
Sean, can you do an impression of Ross saying we were on a break?
We were on a break!
There we go.
Pretty solid.
He only says it when he's charged up, and his voice starts to crack just a little bit. It's like, we were on a break.
Side note, it would be very funny to watch David Schwimmer try to be like a Clint Eastwood tough guy, because there's no way he could pull it off. His voice would start cracking as he like investigates the.
Wait a minute. Didn't he play like Robert the lead Kardashian. Lawyer in the OJ case? Like
he wasn't the main lawyer. He was one of the lawyers, which makes me hate him even more. But anyway, so Rachel get
juice. If you want to follow
juice,
just look up. There's compilations of every time David Schwimmer says juice in the OJ Simpson show.
It is pretty great.
Why?
What he called
Why?
More because it's
that case wasn't like influential and crazy enough. You had
Listen, people watch that show that was a very widely watched.
My brother watches it when he wants to get angry. I don't know about you. I don't actively seek out things that piss me off.
The People versus O.J. Simpson, or Keeping Up with the Kardashians. Simpson. Which one?
It's like I'm sorry. Okay. Something like, you know, maybe the murder of Emmett Till or something like that. Sure, that gets my blood boiling. The case of O.J. Simpson.
So Rachel is being very defensive and trying to deflect onto Monica. And so we start to suspect the two of them. So when Benoit Blanc is done with Rachel, she walks out and her and Monica give each other the death stare. So we don't know if this is because they suspect each other or they suspect the other person is onto them or what the hell is happening. But before we have a chance to figure it out, we're on to the next person, who is Chandler. Let's go with Chandler.
Yeah, I think Chandler should definitely be interviewed next. And of course, one of the main questions is, you know, Mr. Bing, what was your relationship with?
And then Chandler gets all very flustered and sarcastic because he doesn't know how to deal with it, and he's very intimidated.
So he should say something really sarcastic, like, "Well, I was his friend up until he was actually hanged in the closet." Oh, so you knew that your friend was in the closet? No, I didn't realize he wasn't straight.
Just hit the laugh.
Fucking Chandler. Some stupid fucking Chandler comment about, you know, the fact that Ross was found in the closet. Some like generic 90s laugh track bullshit right there. And he says, "Oh, do you think that death is funny, Mr. Bing?" And, you know, then he'll get all defensive, like,
Mr. Bing, how did you react to Ross dying? And then he gets out, and then he got defensive. He's like, I was devastated for a week straight. I'm still devastated. You don't know what you're talking about, man. And then then Benoit should ask Chandler what he does for a living. And then he doesn't know how to answer. And then Benoit's just like, "This is very suspicious, Mr. Bing. It's a very basic question."
I mean, the other basic question I have for you, Mr. Bing, is how long have you known the ladies across the hall? I've known them forever. Why? I mean, unless you have anything against them, in which case I haven't known them at all. No idea who they are. Who are they? You know, it's some stupid fucking Chandler comment. And he's like, "Because my question remains, Mr. Bing, is how do two young girls career in New York?"
All right, so that's a great place to cut off. And who is next? I think, should it be Phoebe or Joey that's next?
Oh, you have to go next, Phoebe, because Phoebe is going to totally fuck with Daniel Craig so hard. they bring Phoebe in next, and, you know, he says, you know, I am so ever sorry for your loss. And she just goes, yeah, it's okay. It's New York. It happens, or some bullshit like that. And he goes, you know, I have so many questions for you. You know, how do you feel after the loss of your very good friend? And she just says something like, to the fact of like, oh, well, he's still here. I can still feel his energy, you know, because when people pass away, I can still feel their aura. I can still feel their aura in the places that they've been, you know, or some bullshit like that. And so she totally baffles Benoit Blanc into, like, you know, she's so zen and so together. And she's got like this, you know, very, very blasé attitude towards death, because she feels that like everybody just transcends into a butterfly or some bullshit. And so he immediately says, well, I can absolutely tell that you have absolutely nothing to do with it, with anything unfortunate happening to your friend. And she says, yes, but if you, you know, want to know what happened to my friend, you should absolutely ask. And then she throws like everybody under the bus with three or four terrible stories, because she loves, Phoebe loves spilling the tea.
Oh man, by the way, the term spilling the tea is fabulous.
Yeah, she spills the tea.
Oh, okay, so Phoebe rats on everybody, but then Joey should hit the first thing he says to Benoit Blanc should be, how you doing?
Yeah, exactly.
And then how does Benoit Blanc react to being quasi hit on by a soap opera star?
Well, I don't know, Mr. Tribbiani. How are you doing?
Okay. All right, let's get back.
All right, Josh, what impression are you going to do to say Mr. Tribbiani?
Oh, my God.
Here's my impression.
All right. Okay, I'm by the way, I'm gonna do another one that's Nicolas Cage for no reason. Hello, Mr. Tribbiani. Oh God, not the bass! Oh no,
God,
my
take
eyes.
A shot for those of you following at home.
Damn it! That would have been great. Okay, Laura, you're Benoit Blanc. You're talking to Joey. He hits on you. What do you say?
Well, I said I don't know, Mr. Tribbiani. How are you doing? No, Mr. Benoit. How are you doing? No, I said, how are you doing? And it just goes back and forth. And he just turns to his associate and goes, this fool doesn't know anything. And just moves on.
All right. Well,
Joey would be the one who legitimately knows nothing, because he's
nothing,
not even aware of anything that's going on.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he doesn't even know Ross is dead until the funeral.
Yeah, right.
What? Yeah, so where are we going? Ross is dead. No.
Okay. What? Ross is dead. I thought he was just doing one of those paleontology things.
Joey. A paleontology thing in a closet, Joey? In a closet?
I thought that because he likes to dig holes, that, you know, we were just digging one so he could be closer to the fossils.
I know, like a research thing. Aw, and all the studio audience has to go, aw, no, Joey. You poor simpleton.
Yeah, it's mostly out of pity. Okay, so Benoit has gathered intel on those main four. Who else does he talk to?
Oh, his parents. Ross's parents. Those uptight fucking New Yorkites, whatever their names were.
The Gellers. I don't
the
remember.
The Gellers, yeah.
Yeah, I know Ross's last name, and by extension, his parents' last name. Yippee.
Yeah, it's Jack and Judy.
Oh, that's right.
Oh my God, Sean, you are so well researched.
It's on my phone.
He researched the socioeconomics of Monica affording a part.
Again, it's on my phone.
I
will take credit where it's due. It is not due here.
Okay, well, I mean.
So Benoit sits down with Mr. and Mrs. Geller to, you know, again, apologize for their loss and just to make sure and ask, you know, Mr. and Mr. Gallup, where were you last Thursday around 7:30 in the evening? And, you know, they give some, like, you know, upstate New York waspy response of where they were or some shit like that. So,
yeah, they were like going to a wine. They were going to a wine club where they were going to watch some horse racing or something. Yeah. That you hear on Frasier.
And it's important to remember that Ross was very clearly their favorite growing up.
True.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that,
and they're just absolutely devastated, much to the chagrin of Monica, who's sitting in the background, downing way too many glasses of Chardonnay, just like, you know, listening to them lament about their lost son.
Laura, is Monica taking inspiration from you?
I'm drinking red wine, okay?
Okay, fine.
You put me in.
Okay, so Monica's in the background, and, you know, Benoit is interviewing her parents. And what kind of stuff do they talk about? Should they, like, should the inheritance come up?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, the inheritance has to come up, I feel like. And it would create some tension where Monica is visibly upset, even though the her parents are trying to act like it's no big deal.
Maybe something to the effect of like, oh yes, Monica's grandmother left this entire apartment to Ross, but since Ross didn't have anything to do with it, he let Monica use it because he had his own apartment across town for him and his son. But now that she's gone, it reverts back to me. And like, so Monica's just like, you know, like shotgunning Chardonnay in the background, thinking that like her mom's going to kick her out at any moment. Because, yes, you know, Ross was the favorite or something. And so later, everybody adjourns to the funeral.
Yes.
He's interviewed everyone. He's taken prints. He's got the autopsy report. He's looking through and something just doesn't add up. And he's walking around the apartment looking at plants and cups and seats and windows. And all of a sudden, he looks across the way and he sees a clue that he hasn't seen before. And that is across the way from Monica and Chandler's apartment, or from Monica's apartment, is an ugly naked guy. Yes, you bitches thought I forgot about him.
Oh, I had forgotten about him. I didn't think you forgot about him.
But the ugly naked man sees all.
Okay, so does the ugly naked man feature into the plot, or is he just an ancillary character?
I think he should definitely give Benoit a very important clue in that he saw Ross and someone arguing in the apartment the day he died, but he couldn't figure out the silhouette of the person he was arguing with because it was behind him and he couldn't see.
And there should be a lot of like, the night Ross died, everybody should have had interactions with him that hint at this tension.
Like Joey owed Ross money for, yes, you know, past due rent or something, and that he didn't have the money to pay. Yeah. And Chandler and Ross got into an argument over some stupid bet that they had over, you know, whether or not, you know, a character in a show they were watching was going to do a certain thing. And Ross and Rachel got into a fight over the, we were on a break, and you know, Ross and Monica got into a fight over the apartment, and Ross and Phoebe got into a fight over, like, she stiffed him on cab fare for something, you know?
No, I think I think for Phoebe, it should be some, like, she sees something mystical, like her dead dad is in a puppy or something. And Ross, and Ross doesn't like that and tells her she's stupid for believing that. And then she wants to murder him as a result.
Yeah, maybe like Ross didn't donate to a homeless man or a homeless shelter or something that she asked him to. And because of that, a puppy was put down and she blames him or something crazy like that.
It could be that. And Phoebe did a crappy job at one of her open mic nights and Ross didn't clap hard enough.
And blames him because he didn't show up.
Yes.
So everybody has a fight or a conversation that they had with him that night.
Yeah.
And so everybody's a suspect except for the one clue that naked guy gave us, and that is that he couldn't see the person arguing with Ross because they were in front of him, which means that whoever was arguing with Ross Geller was shorter than him.
Which doesn't narrow it down at all. I'm pretty sure David Schwimmer is taller than me. So.
I'm pretty sure David Schwimmer is the height of like Peyton Manning. But anyway.
Oh, come on, me. I'm trying to Agatha Christie this shit on three glasses of wine. Give me some
credit. That was pretty clever. No, it's a good. Well, no, but here's what we do. We use the naked guy says that, but then Benoit says like Ross was taller than everybody. That doesn't help me.
It does say David Schwimmer is 6'1", which is actually slightly shorter than me for those who care, but Matthew Perry is 6 feet tall. Add the hair that he rocked as Chandler, I would argue that that would make him taller than Ross.
And is Ross significantly taller than the person he was talking to, because that would make the women more likely.
So maybe Ugly Naked Guy comes to the wake, eats a couple of Monica's shrimp puffs, and says, hey, you know, to Benoit, like, I have some information for you. This is what I saw that night. If you want to know more, meet me on the roof at midnight. And he's like, absolutely, I will meet you there. And he grabs a couple of more shrimp puffs from the buffet and, like, heads out. He's fully clothed, Connor. He's fully clothed.
Okay, thank God.
That's what I was going to ask.
I was worried. Like, is he naked at the wake?
No.
I mean, tell you what, Connor, next time you get invited to a wake, go ahead and hang dong and see how people feel about that.
I mean, I'm not going to do that, but the Ugly Naked Guy has two defining traits.
I mean,
traits.
I was glad you came, and then you dragged your sack across my father's face.
We'll put that on our YouTube channel.
Sean, that's my way of showing affection.
Working your territory.
Oh, my God. I would hate to see what your first dates look like, Finnerty.
Oh, man, they're not pleasant.
They end with a nice pat on the shoulder.
Yes, as Take My Breath Away by Berlin plays, I just pat her on the shoulder and walk her to her door.
Oh, my God.
By the way, Laura, you know how Take My Breath Away goes? Bow, 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 bow.
Oh,
bow, bow, bow.
Someday, y'all, I will have to absolutely narrate one of Connor's fake Southern dates to Take My Breath Away and see how it goes. Only if we get to 1,000 likes will I ever.
We have to do something like that.
I think
instead what we should do is take a classic romantic film like It Happened One Night or something like that and have it be as Connor, as the romantic lead.
Yeah, Connor Finnerty replacing...
Connor Finnerty as Rhett Butler.
Yeah.
Yes. I don't give a shit, dear. Yeah.
Connor Finnerty as Rick in Casablanca.
Ooh, that's a good one.
If you don't get on this fucking plane soon, we're not going to be able to get a refund on our fucking flight tickets there, Elsa. Get on the fucking plane.
Oh, come on. That'd be a bit more romantic than that.
No, you wouldn't, Finnerty. No, you wouldn't.
Oh, come now. Okay.
Josh, right. I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Yes, it is.
I actually had a point. So, like, Ugly Naked Guy tells Benoit Blanc that he has information for him and says, you have to meet me on the roof at midnight so I can give you this information. And then Benoit Blanc goes to the roof at midnight to meet him and instead finds a bloated, ugly, naked guy dead on the rooftop from some kind of poison. Oh my gosh, what could it be? How could naked guy have been poisoned?
He investigates. So,
I think I know how, but I'm not going to spoil it just yet.
Oh, is it because I mentioned shrimp puffs being eaten by like 3 different people? I wonder.
And isn't it interesting then that one of the lead suspects here is an executive chef?
Yeah.
Are they, Sean? Wow. I Chrissy the fuck out of that.
Oh man, that was great. That was great. Okay, so we shouldn't know that yet. We should send it to the autopsy. And then Benoit Blanc goes back and talks to everybody. And then eventually it's revealed that the shrimp puffs killed him.
That he had maybe some kind of like severe allergy to like nuts or something. And everyone's like, oh, if he had an allergy to shellfish, why did he eat the shrimp puffs? And he's like, it wasn't the shrimp puffs that killed him. There was extract of almond in all of the shrimp. Wow, who could have done that except the person who made them? And then, of course, all signs start pointing to Monica.
And although Rachel should be the one who accuses her the most because she's trying to hide it. Or maybe Chandler's trying to hide it. Everybody jumps on Monica because
The most likely way to put almonds in shrimp would be to either fry them in almond oil, which would be conspicuous, or to put it in the shrimp batter, which would be very inconspicuous. Someone would need to do would be to put a few drops in.
Yeah.
If you shredded almond into the bread batter, you wouldn't be able to sense it. Not that I've thought about this. Or you have almond oil extract that you could put into like the egg or roux mixture in order to when you're dunking the shrimp. But either way, there's many different ways to sneak almond into the shrimp puffs that killed Ugly Naked Guy.
That's a great point, and I'm going to say it a third time now. So what we could do
Okay, so whichever one's easier for the plot. Because, all right, an ugly naked guy's been poisoned because of some allergy or something. Monica is chiefly suspect. So what? So where do we go? Does Monica get arrested? Like,
she absolutely gets taken in for questioning. Ugly naked guy was about to reveal some primo information, and he just so happens to get poisoned while the only thing he ate that day was Monica's cooking, especially those shrimp puffs. And Monica has the most to lose, because if Ross died, then the apartment would transfer to her mother, and she might not be able to live there anymore, because Mommy Dearest may want to sell the apartment to buy a new flat in Boca Raton. And so Monica is like the most suspect. And of course, Benoit starts worrying about Ross's mother's health. Like, maybe Ross's mom would be in danger next, because if she died, then maybe, you know, Monica would inherit the apartment. So that's our red herring. So the whole time we got everybody watching this movie hating Monica and her cooking and being like, it's her. It's all about the fucking apartment and blah, 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 and fucking Monica. You know, meanwhile, we have all of the other friends who are still like in mourning over Ross and still talking about it and still trying to like connive and talk about it and splitting up his paleontology relics in his apartment and shit like that.
Yeah.
But we don't notice the one other person that stands to gain from that apartment being in flux. And the only other person that had the motive, we were on a break, and the means, lived in the same apartment and had access to the same kitchen where Monica was cooking the food.
And Laura, check this out. What if, like, during at some point in the ceremony, Rachel was just so broken up because she couldn't reconcile with Ross, the one man that she really loved, and then she left. But maybe we think that she left to poison the shrimp bad stuff.
Everyone's at his grave and memorial saying all of this stuff, and she like gets choked up and leaves, and everyone's like, oh, she's just really choked up because she was still secretly in love with him. They had this will they or won't they relationship for 3 seasons, I mean years, and you know, she and she left to give herself a moment. But what she really did is she ran back to the apartment via some expensive taxi cab in New York City and shredded a bunch of almonds into the batter for the shrimp puffs, hoping, and then she left an invitation on Ugly Naked Man's door for free food in the apartment, and knew from watching him all those years that he would definitely go for the expensive food, that he ate the shrimp puffs and then had an allergic reaction and died a couple of hours later.
However, and I'm going to throw another curveball here, because what makes Knives Out so interesting is the fact that the entire movie is spent following a young woman who believes she's responsible for a murder. And to that end, I can't help but think that Monica perhaps believes that she is responsible for Ugly Naked Guy's death. After all, she is the one who, being out of vanilla extract and that subtle sweetness and just that different kind of a, you know, almost herbaceous note, you know, very earthy tone to the batter. Instead, she swaps out for the almond extract, not realizing that the almond extract is itself artificial, which is actually made out of plants and stuff like that that's relatively harmless. And
like it's like cherry, right? It's like cherry instead of actual almond for that scent.
Yeah,
that
flavor. And if you really want to be grossed out, look up what fake vanilla and raspberry flavoring is. But
hard pass. Oh, geez. Hard pass.
Yep. You're not going to want to know.
Monica spends half of the movie trying to hide the fact that she may have accidentally killed Ugly Naked Guy, even though she really didn't.
Exactly.
Yes. She thinks she
and that makes her look more suspect.
And what's more is that it also gives Rachel the one slip up to make, because Monica casually drops that she knows the fact that, as you know, the caterer for this affair, that she's been made aware of other people's dietary issues, and so is trying to make things without nuts.
Yes. Also, remember that one episode in season 3, right before all this shit went down, Ugly Naked Guy's apartment was up for rent. And everyone was kissing his ass with like mini muffins and this and that, trying to get him to agree to rent to them. Maybe it was season 4 or 5, trying to get him to rent to them.
I watched that one.
Yeah, right? So Monica would have been aware of his dietary restrictions, having wanted to kiss his ass. so that she knew not to include any nut type of things in any of the orders.
So she wouldn't have killed. She would not have killed him. So everybody else thinks that Monica did it, but maybe she didn't do it. And now we're moving on to Rachel as the main suspect. Now everybody's trying to point the finger at Rachel.
Except Rachel, in the meantime, Monica has been arrested. Monica's been arrested, and she feels so guilty because Monica is Monica, and she's such a type A personality. She probably, in a moment of, like, stress-induced hysteria, admitted to Benoit Blanc that she may have accidentally included almonds in the shrimp puff. So while she may not have killed her brother, she may have killed ugly naked guy. And so then she's also suspect for the murder of her own brother, in which case her mother gets into an upstart and she starts like saying, well, I'm going to disown my daughter for murdering my son. And then, of course, Ross's parents turn to the only other person who's renting the apartment at the time besides Monica, which is Rachel, and says, Rachel, we can't bear to look at this apartment anymore. We don't want to step foot in it. Would you just take it off our hands for us? And Rachel says, oh, I feel so terrible, but yes, of course I will, anything to help the family. So they're about to hand over this apartment to Rachel because Monica's been arrested and Rachel is about to cash in on her master plan.
Get it. There you go.
This is really good.
This is so
good. This is awesome.
And
oh man, I would actually watch this.
And so of course there is one tragic flaw in all of this, and that is the closet. Okay. Am I ready for this? This is like some deep fucking deep state Friends action. Who else?
Can you describe it as Benoit Blanc?
Certainly. I can do the reveal as Benoit Blanc. Are you ready for this? You guys don't pay me enough for this, but I'm gonna try.
Wait, did we determine Ross's actual
cause of
like
death?
Cause of death. Thank you.
Strangulation.
He was dead.
Strangulation in the closet. Yeah. He was strung up in the closet. May have been autoerotic asphyxiation. Everyone.
That's what. Oh my god! I'm so happy you said that. That's exactly where I was going. That's exactly where I was going.
I love Kill Bill.
Yes, Queen. So,
I like in excess. Michael Hutchins will live forever.
So Benoit Blanc gathers everybody together via invitation and says, don't arrest Monica. Bring her to the apartment. Bring everybody there. I have one final announcement before you read the final will and testament of Ross Geller and execute his estate. And before you sign over the apartment to Rachel, let me just set the record straight one final time. So then he goes and he says, he brings everybody together and says, you know, I do have one mystery in all of this. I do not know who hired me. And he goes through all of the exposition that some fancy fashion expert that works on Fifth Avenue definitely would not want a murder attached to her name. So who better than some fancy fashionista to pay out all that money to have him come and investigate the murder to be sure that Monica went down for the crime so that she could not be framed for it. So she has a free apartment, guilt-free, and can use all of her resources and money to become a great fashionista in New York. And he sits down and he tells out the whole story that, you know, while everyone here had an argument with Ross Geller that night, there was only one person with the means and motive to kill him. And that was Ms. Rachel Green, and goes on to talk about how they were able to get close because even though they were on a break, which was Rachel's immediate anger point, she was able to get close to him enough to trick him into like kissing her or making out with her. And that's how she got like the tie or rope around his neck to strangle him to death. And having screwed Joey having screwed Joey Tribbiani and lived in that apartment for at least one season across the hall, still had a key to that apartment, unlocked the door, dragged Ross Geller's unconscious, barely alive body across and strung him up in the closet to die alone in his brief existence. Just experience his last moments inside a closet in a walk-up in New York City. And goes on to talk about all of her motives, because with Ross out of the way, planting the evidence to Monica. She would be blamed. The parents would feel so guilty. They wouldn't want to have anything to do with that apartment. They would most likely give it to Rachel. Rachel would be able to eliminate her one beau that done her wrong and would be able to rid herself of her overly annoying roommate at the same time. And the only man that ever saw anything, that naked peeping Tom across the way, who when she turned around with Ross's unconscious, barely alive body, she could see through the New York City skyline windows. So she invited personally to the wake, and only to shred some actual nuts inside the shrimp puffs to poison him. Invited him up on the roof just to make sure he would croak his final steps up on that roof, leaving every stone completely unturned and all witnesses dead. To rake in the benefits of a single woman living in a two-bedroom rent-controlled apartment in New York City to expand her career. You almost got away with it. But you
that was spectacular. My God. You know, Laura, I used to think that Michael Jordan winning the NBA Finals Game 6 with a flu was the most impressive performance I've seen. But you, carrying this podcast on your back, doing a foghorn, leghorn, Daniel Craig voice, half a bottle of wine deep.
So much so.
Bravo.
Okay.
Bravo.
I pay tribute to this podcast for to the only other reason why I can get through my day, and that is the podcast of all the white girls talking about murder. What the hell is it called?
My Favorite Murder.
My Favorite Murder podcast, which is the only reason why I can get through my work day. It's all about girls from California talking about their favorite murders. So as a token white woman talking about her favorite thing, which is true crime and murder, I was able to come up with that on the fly, half a bottle in. So there it is.
That was pretty amazing.
And now I'm picking up the football, because now obviously we have to arrest the one and only Rachel Green as she attempts to flee. When the door is opened, however, here's this for one hell of a crossover. We see Tom Selleck as his character from Blue Bloods.
What?
At which point Monica says, "Oh my God, you look like somebody I used to date." And he kind of winks at her. And as he takes Rachel into custody and leads her outside, the elevator opens and there's Janice, and she goes, Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
I was just coming to the funeral and oh my God. Yes.
The shrimp puffs were wonderful.
Wait. Janice is Jewish. She wouldn't have any of the shrimp puffs.
Okay. I'm guessing maybe she's reformed. She's probably pretty loose about it.
Yeah.
All right, cool. I think Sean, it's all for that shrimp puff line. By the way, we should, like, if somebody hated humanity and they were a nihilist, they should have a romantic comedy where it's Janice starring opposite Gilbert Gottfried. Oh, God. People would want to just, like, tear their ears off.
Why would you want this to make love to you?
Okay. All right. So,
can you even imagine what their kids would sound like? Mom, I want to go to the park.
Dad said we could go to the beach.
All right. That's a horrifying thing, and I'm mad at myself for bringing it into existence.
But any third YouTube hole, look up Gilbert Gottfried 50 Shades of Grey.
Yes.
What?
Oh no.
No.
Oh no.
Her clitoris. Around and around.
Oh, guys, a half a bottle of wine cannot erase whatever was just said. I'm sorry. I gotta call it.
And she strokes me in a wall of my vagina.
There is not enough Olive Garden breadsticks in the world to plug my ears with that sound. I'm sorry.
Laura, same, honestly. Okay, any other big Friends crossovers we want to put in there? Like the coffee shop owner, maybe, or, you know, any of the other exes? Or I suppose it's too late because Rachel's already getting arrested.
Maybe Hank Azaria could walk a dog by as she's being put in the cop car.
Yeah, right?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Hank Azaria was in the show.
Yeah, maybe some of the interviews could take place at, you know, Central Perk or something, and Gunther could come over and talk about, like, you know, how he could never believe that Rachel could ever do something so heinous because she's always been so kind to him. Cue audience laughter. Yes.
Josh.
I thought that was a
screen
of horror for a second.
Yeah. Josh.
Okay. So everybody's laughing at Gunther. Yes. I feel bad for him, but he's funny to laugh at. But yeah. Okay. So is there, all right. So we have Gunther.
We got it. I think, yeah, we got most of it.
Yeah. The only thing we didn't bring up was Ross's lesbian ex-wife, but I guess it wasn't really necessary. We had enough people who wanted to kill him anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that he was not, I'm not going to go on record saying that he was the most hated member of Friends ever, but like I was not a fan of David Schwimmer's character on Friends at all. I always thought that he, you know, didn't really add to it. So I'm glad in our podcast that he ended up dead. And I sincerely hope that whatever parody song that Connor comes up with, we'll just be able to enumerate that for all of us.
And now for a rendition of the Friends theme song that talks about the plot of this episode, Connor, play us out. Your jealousy is more than we can take. You think you're smarter than us and say we're on a break. The other five of us can't stand this stuff. But among us there might be one who would say that enough is enough. I may murder you when the axe starts to fall. I may murder you. Blame Monica for it. I may murder you, get her apartment too. I'm Benoit Blanc, I'm here to solve Mr. Geller's death. You may be crying now, but you're all suspects. Don't be disarmed by my Kentucky drawl. My detective skills and Southern pride voice could take down each of y'all. Killed Ross Geller. I'm sure it was one of you. Who killed Ross Geller? Is that blood on your shoe? Who killed Ross Geller? I just found my first clue. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Let's Remake a Movie. We hope you enjoyed it, and if you want to support us, like, subscribe, and if you're listening on Apple, rate us 5 stars. We're available on all major platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Make sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Let's Remake a Movie, and send us your ideas for which movies we should remake next. Thank you so much, and see you next time.